Yes, good morning, everyone. I also would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk to you today on screening men who have sex with men for STIs, what works best. I will speak, first of all, generally about STI among MSM, and then I will move on to some emerging infections like hepatitis C, lymphogranuloma, venereum, anal cancer screening and neurosyphilis among MSM, and conclude with some of the screening projects that we started in Amsterdam. Homosexual male-male activity is as common and as old as mankind, probably, and this was stressed out in the famous Kinsley report in 1970s, where it was found that 20% of the adult men in the U.S. had sexual contact to orgasm with another man sometimes in their life, and even 6.7% after 18 years old, and about 1.5 to 2% in the previous year when they were approached. And in a more recent study, approximately half of the men with homosexual contacts were currently or previously married. And that brings us to an important issue on the definition of homosexuality as opposed to men who have sex with men. Homosexuality can be seen as the preference. Someone can have homosexual desires or preference, but that doesn't necessarily mean that this will lead to homosexual activity. In fact, many religions condemn homosexual activity, but not the desire itself, and the preference therefore in many men will be kept a secret in fear of rejection by society. Then there is the identity, and that's as we know it in many Western countries as being gay, a lifestyle consistent with sexual desire and behavior. It is self-defined, but it is not relevant in other parts of the world as such. For example, in India, there are other sexual identities like the Hiras, transgender MSM, who are also known as the third sex, Kotis and Panties, and also in Thailand and Laos, there are men who are designated as the Katui, and the same counts for Cambodia, where Srasos and Prosat are MSM who have sex with other men, but they do not identify themselves as being gay, as we know in the Western world. And then lastly, homosexuality can be seen as the behavior, having sex as a man with other men. That, in fact, is important when you want to assess the risk for having an STI. So that's seen here. It's not very clear. Identity, for example, you can be a priest who keeps to celibacy, have homosexual feelings, but you will not be exposed to STI as such as long as you hold celibacy. On the other hand, you can be a happily married man, have children and a lucky family life, but have sex every once in a while with other men in dark rooms or in parks or otherwise. You do not consider yourself as a homosexual, but you do get exposed to STI. So it's the behavior which is accounting to the increased risk for STI and not so much the preference, the desire or the identity. And in fact, direct inquiries in someone's personal sexual desires may lead to socially acceptable responses. And for that reason, it might be more appropriate during an STI consultation to ask just very direct for the sex of the sex partners. Do you have sex with men or with women? Which is less confronting in many situations. This is also debated by many MSM because it obscures social dimensions of sexuality. It undermines self-labeling of lesbian, gay and bisexual people, and therefore it does not sufficiently describe the variations of sexual behavior. So what is known about the STI epidemic among MSM? This is the epidemiological graph of the syphilis prevalence in Amsterdam from 1980s up until 2011. And in the pink line, you see the prevalence of syphilis, infectious syphilis among men who have sex with men. And you see a dip around the occurrence of HIV/AIDS. And around the turn of the century, you see again an increase to the same level as before the introduction of HIV and AIDS. But in heterosexual males and females, it has been low all the time. So there's clearly a distinct epidemic of syphilis going on. And this is also seen in many other European countries. Here you see, for example, the situation in Denmark and France, where the far majority of syphilis cases is found among men who have sex with men, and only few, for example, in female patients. But this is different from many Eastern European countries. For example, in the Czech Republic, you see it's about half-half what is found among men and about among females. So the syphilis epidemic in Eastern Europe is much more heterosexual epidemic as opposed to in Western European countries like Denmark and France, where it's focused among men who have sex with men. And that stresses out again the importance in surveillances to also ask the ones who are surveyed for their sexual preference. And you see that in many southern European countries, for example, in Italy and Malta, but also in Greece and in Iceland, sexual preference is not included in the surveillance data. And this is important to get a grip on the epidemic that is going on, of course. We've done a DNA fingerprinting study in visitors of the STI clinic in Amsterdam who had chlamydia, and here you see the clusters that we found in pink. Again, it's the chlamydia strains found in MSM as opposed to the chlamydia strains found in heterosexuals in blue over here, and you clearly see that there's a distinct distinct clusters of chlamydia found in MSM. Here, for example, you see the LGV strains, and what's more obvious is that it's more a clonal outbreak among MSM as opposed to a more heterogeneous spread in more different clusters and loose singletons in the heterosexual population. This is also seen in gonorrhea strains, where we have looked at decreased susceptibility for extended cephalosporin cefotaxime. Here you see the strains who are decreased susceptible for cefotaxime, and you see that in an older age group of MSM, it is more prevalent. Also, they are in more cases are HIV positive. They have had syphilis or current syphilis infections as opposed to have no TPPH serology. And also lymphogranuloma as an incident infection is found more in the group who has decreased cefotaxime susceptible gonorrhea strains at the moment of the infection. And we also did molecular biology, and we found that genetic antimicrobial resistance strains did cluster predominantly in the MSM transmission networks. We prioritize patients, and apart, if you look at the STIs that we screen for, which are called the big five, HIV, hepatitis B, syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia, overall in the STI clinic population, we find 15% of one of these infections in an individual. This is correlated to age, younger age. Persons who are warned have complaints. Some of the ethnic minorities, like the Antillean and Surinamese population in Amsterdam, but especially MSM, are at risk up until 22% of the population. And moreover, especially HIV-positive MSM, one in three of HIV-positive men is infected with one of the other four infections apart from the HIV infection. So MSM In MSM, STIs are found more frequently compared to the general population. And if you speculate what drives this, this can be explained in biological factors. For example, a higher number of sex partners, more frequent penetrative and receptive sex, and also exposure of highly receptive tissues like the anorectal mucosa. But also social explanations are considered, for example, ignorance and myths around the danger of male-male sexual contacts, barrier protection like condoms, which are not used for contraceptive reasons, illegality, homophobia, and stigmatization, which discourages stable relationships and encourages fleeting, anonymous, opportunistic contacts. And also you see in MSM the use of disinhibiting drug substance. If you look globally at the gay rights, you see a sharp difference in Western and Southern European countries, but also in Latin and Northern America, where more and more gay rights are being legalized, for example, in marriages, as opposed to large parts of African nations and also the Muslim nations, where homosexuality is still criminalized. And of course, this also has an effect on the screening possibilities of MSM. It might lead to poor access to healthcare and decreased help-seeking behavior among men who have sex with men because of patient-related factors like shame and guilt and fear of disapproval, but also from the clinician view, factors might lead to poor access to healthcare like discomfort with male-male sex, homophobia, a judgmental and moralistic approach, fear of contamination, ignorance about specific conditions in MSM, and also not obtaining swabs from a correct body orifice if you do not take an appropriate sex interview. Okay, I'd like to move on to specific conditions found predominantly in MSM. For example, hepatitis C, which is still considered in many guidelines not a sexually transmitted infection, but more a bloodborne infection. Also in the CDC current guidelines, people in discordant couples for hepatitis C, the seronegative couple is not considered to be screened for hepatitis C during the sexual relationship, for example. But we found different data around the turn of the century among MSM, and especially HIV-positive MSM. We found a tenfold increase of hepatitis C incidence in the period before 2000 as opposed to the period after 2000. And this was confirmed in many HIV cohorts in France, Germany, and also in England. And here you see the observed hepatitis C prevalence in the red bar, where you see a sharp increase up until 18% around 2007. It is decreasing at the moment. And what you also see is that among HIV negative MSM is low, and it has remained low up until now. So HIV co-infection seems very important to acquire hepatitis C in MSM. Also here we did some genotypic studies together with neighboring countries in Western Europe, and we found large clusters of hepatitis C with the same strain, not only in couples, but also in clusters which were transnational. We found the same genotypes in France, in Germany, in the Netherlands, and also in England. And we also found specific nation-confined clusters, like this one, for example, in the UK. What are the risk associations for hepatitis C infections? Much is attributed to mucosal damage. For example, people with ulcerative STIs are found more often to be HCV seroconverted, traumatic sexual practice like fisting, toy sex, and group sex, and also the use of party drugs, which leads to disinhibition. And apart from that, HIV seropositivity is a very strong risk indicator for hepatitis C in this group, as I already mentioned. We attribute this to reduced immunity, but also serosorting might be a very important factor. And more recently, we found an association with specific subcultures like leather, rubber, lycra, and jeans subcultures among MSM, which are independent from HIV serostatus. So it seems like the introduction of hepatitis C is coinciding around 1996 with the introduction of effective antiretroviral therapy. And from then on, you see a clonal expansion. And it looks like there was incidental introduction from drug injecting networks for hepatitis C around the 1970s and 1980s, but it really started to expand in the MSM community from 1996 on, which is probably attributed to the increase of sexual risk taking after HIV optimism associated with effective antiretroviral therapy. What is more alarming is if you look at the reinfection among MSM with hepatitis C who were successfully treated for their hepatitis C infection, we found that in 56% who became hepatitis C RNA negative, 11 of them got reinfected, and we could also identify that there were different strains, for example. So we calculated the cumulative incidence was 33% in 2 years. So one in three of these men got reinfected within 2 years with hepatitis C again because of continued risk-taking behavior. So this means that also after successful treatment, these men should be screened for hepatitis C RNA because they can get reinfected. And also it's clearly that current prevention measures do not help to prevent the ongoing hepatitis C infection in this group. I'd like to move on to LGV. As you know, it's caused by a more aggressive variant than the one that is known to cause urogenital chlamydia infection. It's an invasive organism which spreads via the lymphatic system to local regional lymph nodes and can cause buboes. And it was known endemic in equatorial regions up until 2003 when an outbreak among HIV-positive MSM was found in the Western world. This was a clonal outbreak of L2B. The vast majority has anorectal infections, and that's up until to date. So the mode of transmission is still enigmatic in that sense. You see the epidemic curve, and you see that again there is a rise, and this is also reported in the UK, for example, in the last years, that LGV is still present since 2003. So the infection is, the epidemic is really going on. Why is it important to screen MSM for LGV? Because it's clustered with a lot of co-infections, hepatitis C, as I already mentioned, HIV, and also gonorrhea, multi-drug antimicrobial resistant strains. There is still a fear for spillover to the population at large. Some heterosexual LGV infections have been identified, but up until now it doesn't seem to be very large problems as such. And LGV needs to be treated more extensive than the other chlamydia infections, at least up to 3 weeks, whereas the non-LGV variants can be treated with 1 week of doxycycline or with azithromycin. And of course, late complications do occur, like strictures, for example. And especially in gastroenterologists, it isn't known that LGV is a cause of proctitis. How to screen for LGV? First, nucleic acid amplification test is required. And if it is positive, in-house LGV test can confirm this infection. I will skip this slide for time constraints. We found urethral infections of LGV, which we think is the missing link in the current epidemic among MSM. We checked for the urine samples of index patients with LGV and also their partners, and we found 2.1 of the urine samples positive for LGV in the index patients, and up to 7% of the partners with of the partners of LGV index cases had LGV strains in their urine, and a lot of them were asymptomatic, and especially lymphadenopathy, which you expect in inguinal infections, were in most cases not there. At the moment, LGV partners are treated with either a short course of doxycycline of 1 week or with azithromycin. But here you see a case series where persons who were notified for LGV and treated with azithromycin did develop inguinal LGV within certain weeks. So it looks like we also have to revise our guidelines and start treating the partners with a full course of 3 weeks of doxycycline. So inguinal LGV is rare, but urethral LGV might be key in the transmission of the current epidemic. We probably need to change the recommendation to treat partners with azithromycin. And what we also found is that if buboes do occur, you in many cases do need to treat longer than 3 weeks even. For time constraints, I will skip the neurosyphilis and the anal cancer infections, which were probably covered during other talks in this conference. And I'd like to show a little of the screening project we have in Amsterdam. For asymptomatic men, they can go to a website, print out a form, and go to 11 laboratory stations in the city and get tested for the 5 STIs, as I said, and we communicate the results with them via the internet. And we started a case-holding MSM project at the moment, where high-risk MSM, HIV-positive and HIV-negative, we identify them if they have one STI, more than one STI in the past year, or if they have a PEP request, which we know that a lot of them will seroconvert in the recent future. And we screen them 4 times annually, and we are planning also behavioral and biomedical interventions in this group. So to conclude, MSM, it's a proven vulnerable group for STI throughout the world. I've mentioned some of the re-emerging infections. And there is a need for prevention and treatment and care programs for this dedicated group. In large parts of Africa, Eastern Europe, and the Islamic world, repression of homosexuals is increasing, which makes access to good care a challenge. And sound surveillance data on STI among MSM are still lacking in many countries. And clinicians should be made aware, especially during training, on the diversity of sexual orientation of their patients. And also, in case of anorectal complaints, one should inquire about anal intercourse. And this is maybe apparent for many of you, but for our colleagues like gastroenterologists, this is completely a different case. And there's a need for evidence-based safe sex programs because the infections are still going on. Thank you for your attention.